For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's July 9th in Derech Hashem. We are in Chelek Dal Perek Shmini. So this is Mitzvahs Hazmanim. We mentioned last time that we're going to go through the different Yomim Tovim and talk about the specific mitzvahs about those Yomim Tovim. So we know the Yomim Tovim, we know the mitzvahs. It's just that he adds certain perspectives on them, which I don't know that we would have thought of on our own. I also told you that we would touch on the fact that some of these mitzvahs, women are also chayavosin, and some of the mitzvahs are only men. So how does that, how does the understanding of those mitzvahs make a difference for women if women aren't doing the mitzvahs anyway? Now, there's matzah, which women do as well, so your understanding of the mitzvah is significant because you do the mitzvah. But sukkah and lulav, which you don't have to do, although you could if you want to, how does the understanding of the mitzvah, how do we deal with the understanding of the mitzvah vis-a-vis the fact that only men have to do it and women don't? So the first mitzvah he addresses is Pesach and talks about matzah. And he says a fascinating thing. So we all know that Pesach is Malchei Ruseinu, which doesn't just mean that we got out of slavery in a physical sense, but it also means that we went to becoming an Am of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we went to becoming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he says that we know, as he's mentioned many times, that the world is a place which operates primarily on a gashmius level, and that we are murkav, we're grafted between gashmius and ruchnius, and that the struggle of life, as we all know, is that we are tempted to follow what our gashmi wants, and it's our job to subjugate that gashmi to the ruchni and follow what the ruchni wants. So we all know, we've heard many times, that Pesach in being Zman Cheruseinu is meant to be a Cherus from the Yetzer Hara. We all know that Chametz represents the Yetzer Hara, while Matzah represents, there's no bloatedness, there's no taste that is developed through the rising of the dough, and it therefore represents more of a not indulging in gashmias and being more involved in ruchnias. I'm sure we've heard that many times. Many of the mefarshim compare bedikas chametz to searching all around for any shemetz of avera, of yetzahara, to eradicate that from our lives. This is the aleph beis of Hashkafa with Pesach, which you've all heard many times, and this won't be the last time you hear it. But what he introduces, which was new to me, very interesting, is that he says that the fact that matzah is hard on the digestive system, everybody has trouble with matzah one way or another, but everybody's got trouble with matzah. Matzah is not easy to digest. It doesn't work well with the body. So he says the reason for that is that the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world is that we're not supposed to be eating matzah. Matzah is not normal food. Normal food is chametz. Normal food is bread. Because our bodies that are meant to work in a physical world with physical food, in food that is made, we'll call it, normally, properly. That's the way our bodies were meant to work. And that's why bread is digested more easily, it's assimilated more easily into the body, because it's normal. That's what we were created to be and do. And the way we're normally supposed to operate is in a world of chametz. It is on Pesach for a very short time, for 7 days, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Meshayer. He calibrated that's the amount of time throughout the year when we are supposed to try to exist, not try, we must exist, on a matzah level. which is a level where it's not like Yom Kippur where we're not indulging in anything, where we're not involved in our bodies at all. We are involved in our bodies, but on a much limited sense, much more limited sense than normal. Where normally we're eating in a regular, normal way, a normal Gashmi way. And on Pesach, we limit it with matzah. And he says that that's why the body has trouble tolerating it, because it's not normal for the body. Hashem doesn't want it to be Pesach all year round. It's supposed to be chametz all year round and matzah only on Pesach. Very interesting, the hair, which I never thought of, that it's not coincidental that the body has trouble with matzah. I always thought it was just because of the change in diet. Anytime you change your diet, the body always has trouble reacting in the beginning, and it takes a little time for the body to get used to a new diet. The Gemara says that shinoi veses, changing one's normal way of doing things, tchilas chole meayin, is the beginning of a stomach sickness. When you change your routine, especially eating routine, it makes a person's digestive system act up. That's what I always figured. But he's saying differently. He's saying that it's not the way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants a person's body to normally eat through matzah. Now, what he doesn't talk about, which is interesting, is that all of the menachos, all the flour that was baked or fried in the Beis HaMikdash was matzah. It was all matzah. The Beis HaMikdash was matzah all year round. It was Pesach all year round, except for two things. There are only two things that could be chametz in the Beis HaMikdash. And they were Shtei Alechem on Shavuos. The Shtei Alechem on Shavuos, just that carbon, was two loaves of chametz. And then also, now the Lechem Panim. Lechem Panim is matzah, believe it or not. And you think bread, right? It's supposed to be delicious, but it was matzah. It was matzah. Their matzah would have been thicker than our matzah. We're very machmir in how we make matzah. Their matzah would have been thicker, but nevertheless it was matzah. So if you bring a carbon todah, you have to bring 40 loaves. 30 of those loaves are matzah, but 10 are chametz. That's the only time you have chametz in the Beis HaMikdash. That's it. Other than that, the Beis HaMikdash is Pesach all year round. So it's interesting that so there it's meant to be Pesach all year round. Yet the Kohanim who work in the Beis HaMikdash, they are regular human beings. And therefore, according to what the Ramchal is writing, it would seem to indicate that they would have digestive trouble all year round. Now the Kohanim didn't work all year round in the Beis HaMikdash. It was divided up into 24 Mishmaros. You worked once every 24 weeks. So you worked roughly 2 weeks a year. So it wasn't like they worked there the whole year round. But when there were very few Kohanim, like in the time of Aaron and his sons, so they had matzah all the time. The Mishnah tells us that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a special Kohen who was in charge. He was a doctor. There was an on-site doctor in the Beis HaMikdash who dealt primarily with stomach ailments for the Kohanim. Now the Mefarshim over there say that the way they say it is because the Kohanim were eating a lot of meat and oil, and they're walking on barefoot on marble floors, which were cold. So it was stone floors. So they needed a doctor because it was common they would get ill. But what the Ramchal is saying is just the fact they're eating matzah all the time would make a person ill. So they needed someone to treat them on a regular basis. So it's interesting, the body was not made to be a matzah body. Matzah man. It was not to be a matzah body, to be a chametz body. That's the way a person was made to be. Pesach is the one time where we do this. Hashem wants us to do this because He wants that time to be a time where we pull away from the Gashmi to still eat, but eat in a less Gashmi sense, less indulging sense. Very interesting to hear. Any questions on that? Now the next thing he addresses is sukkah and lulav. And again, certain things was just interesting, the additional points that he made that I had not heard before. So we all know, we've heard this many times, sukkah is ananei kavod, And when you go into the sukkah, you're surrounded by the mitzvah. It's one of the few mitzvahs that you do with your entire body. Your entire body is immersed in the mitzvah. There are very few mitzvahs like that. One of those mitzvahs is mikvah. Mikvah, the whole body goes into the water. So here, the whole body goes into the sukkah. So you're completely surrounded by a mitzvah. That's what you're doing when you're in the sukkah. And living in a diras arai, in a temporary dwelling, which means that you are subject to the dangers of being in. Why do we build more permanent structures? Because they're safer. They're safer. They're more equipped to deal with the elements. They're more comfortable. They are more equipped. They are more safe from intruders, wild animals, people. You have nice solid walls. You feel safer. In a sukkah where it's flimsy, so you feel more exposed because you are more exposed. And the emuna of trusting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that whether it's a 12-inch thick wall of concrete or whether it's a flimsy fiberglass wall, doesn't make a difference. You're the same protected either way because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one protecting us no matter which one it is. So we know that about the sukkah. And we know that there's that going into the sukkah is a way of being completely dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have a flimsy roof over our head. If it rains, it rains right in. You know, it's a sukkah, which is a diras arai, a temporary dwelling. And that's the whole idea of sukkah. What he adds is that the Anane cover that Klal Yisrael lived in, besides being miraculous and the fact that it made things comfortable, it controlled the temperature, it flattened out the terrain, it killed the snakes and scorpions, which were normally found in a desert area. It was a very pleasant place to be. They didn't need new clothing because the Anane covered would rub against their clothing and make the clothing as if it were new all the time. There are many nisim that took place because of the Anane covered. But he writes that, perhaps this is obvious, but living in the Anane Kavod meant that you are on a higher level of Ruchnius too. Because the cocoon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in was meant to give us an environment in which we are completely His, in which we are completely devoted to Him. We know that sometimes those who did Averos were ejected from the Anane Kavod. The Anane Kavod would spit them out because they did Averos. So the Anane Kavod wouldn't tolerate that. And there was a certain special ruchnius, a certain special kedusha in the Anane Kavod. We can talk about that today with living in it. Well, today, on any day, living in Eretz Yisrael, that's another mitzvah you do with your whole body. So there's a certain kedusha that the Anane Kavod had, that, and a certain level that we were on when we were in the Anane Kavod. When we go into the sukkah, that's also what's happening. It's not just that we are showing our devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lech Lecha Acharei Bamidbar. It's not just that. It's also that there's a certain kedusha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu imbues the sukkah with, that when you live in the sukkah, you are elevated by that kedusha. The lulav in Esrog was fascinating. I mean, it's lulav in Esrog is something which a lot of people have trouble with. Exactly what is that mitzvah all about? So we know that the lulav and esrog and hanasim and arbos are compared to various parts of the body. We know that it's compared to various types of Jews, and the bringing together of all types of Jews, the bringing together of all types of parts of the body to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We've heard all those things many times before. As I said before, the aleph phase of the hashkafa of sukkahs, of lulav. What he says is that when Klal Yisrael does the mitzvahs properly, and the Or Hashem, the light of Hashem, is on Klal Yisrael, then the pasuk of Vera'u kolame ha'aretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha v'yaru mimecha, that all of the ame ha'aretz will see that the name of Hashem is called upon you and they will be afraid of you, that pasuk takes place when we're doing the mitzvahs properly and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's light is upon us. So he says that is true of lulav and esrog. That when doing the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, that creates this environment or this projection of ro kolam yaretz kishem Hashem nikra lecha v'yaru mimecha. which is fascinating. We applied it before, because I heard it before, in regard to, the Gemara says it, in regard to the tefillin. Gemara says that Rav Elazar Gadol says, Eilu tefillin shabarosh, that the head tefillin is this, V'ra'u kol am ha'aretz ki shem Hashem nikra lecha. I told you the story of the Vilna Gaon. But that he's applying it to Lulav and Esrog. Then when Klal Yisrael holds the Lulav and Esrog, they do the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog, that makes the aur of Hashem shine upon them, and there's a fear that the Goyim have of Klal Yisrael. He says that we know that in the future, the aur of Hashem will be so powerful upon us that the Goyim of their own volition, we won't have to do anything, they will fall and bow, and they will ask to become avadim to us. They'll want to be meshubah to us. The aura of HaKadosh Baruch Hu upon us will make them want to subjugate themselves to us. So he says this is accomplished through the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog, with the nanuim, with the shaking of the Lulav and Esrog. You know, the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog is accomplished by picking them up. You're aware of that. As soon as you take the Lulav Hadassim and Arvos and the Esrog and you put them together, you're yotzei the mitzvah. That's it. You're done. We also do nanuim, and then we shake the Lulav and Esrog in all directions. That's an additional part of the mitzvah. So with the nanuim and the hakafos, he says, then this idea of the Shem Hashem Nikra Lecha is brought out with the Lulav and Esrog. He mentions Chanukah and Purim, doesn't talk that much about them, just mentions real more or less what we already know, that the Chanukah is the Kohanim being strengthened over the Rishayim of the Yavanim and the Misyavnim, and that they wanted, the Yavanim and the Misyavnim wanted to take us away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Torah, and the Kohanim restored us back to the Torah, and Purim, where they wanted to destroy us, and we went back and we were saved in Galus Bavel, because Purim is the end of Galus Bavel, even though it takes place in Paras Hamadai, but Paras Hamadai is really the end of Galus Bavel. So we were protected in Bavel, and also we went back and we were makabel the Torah again. So that's Chanukah and Purim. He does not get into the specific mitzvahs of the menorah, and he mentions it, but he doesn't really discuss the exact correlation of the menorah and the Megillah and the mitzvahs Hayom of Purim. Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So he says that on Rosh Hashanah, which is a Yom Hadin, so we know that we're supposed to be judged on Rosh Hashanah. And judgment does not, according to the strict meaning of judgment, there shouldn't be any rachmanas. Din is, if you did this, you get that. So if you did good, you get rewarded. If Chas V'Shalom you did bad, then Chas V'Shalom you get punished. There's no room for negotiation. Either you didn't or you didn't do it. You can, with a court in this world, you can negotiate whether you actually did it or not. There could be witnesses, there could be false witnesses, you could discuss it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows exactly what happened. He knows what you were thinking, he knows why you were thinking it, he knows what you were doing, why you were doing it, he knows everything. So there's no room for doubt, and therefore Rosh Hashanah should be, you did this, you get that, finished, end the story, end the discussion. There's no room for Achmanis. That's what Din is. So, but he says, as we already spoke about, really back, I think in the first Chelek, we already spoke about, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates mida k'neged mida, measure for measure. Therefore, we know the rule is that if we are mavir al midoseinu, we don't stand on principle, that if somebody wrongs us, we let it go. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates mida k'neged mida with us. If we wronged him, so to speak, he lets it go. So what he says is, what he explains is that the rachmanus is not stam rachmanus. It's the Rachmanis is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu embedded in the way the world runs that the din should be mida keneged mida. And therefore, if a person acts with Rachmanis and lets things go, HaKadosh Baruch Hu likewise acts with Rachmanis and lets things go. So, now he doesn't explain how this works, but he says that just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu embedded that into din, he also embedded shofar into din. That shofar has the capacity to bring rachmanas into the din. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu embedded that in din. Doesn't explain how. He just says that. Now, he does say further that the main point of shofar is to bring out the schus avos, that by blowing the shofar, then we invoke our avos, which of course helps us with rachmanas. But he doesn't get into too much more detail about how the mitzvah of shofar particularly leads to rachmanas for us. And much is said on the subject. I'm sure you've heard many things about it. Just one twist, which you perhaps have heard, perhaps have not heard, one twist on it is that shofar is the way that you are mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's that we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the melech, because a shofar is the way you herald the king. You know, before the king walks in, they blow a trumpet. So we herald the king, we announce the coming of the king by blowing the shofar. If people are afraid of their averis and don't want din, they would never blow the shofar. They wouldn't want HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They wouldn't want the king to walk in. If you're afraid of a court case, you don't want the judge to walk in the door. You want the judge to have a sick kid at home and stay home for the day. You don't want the judge to come home, to come in. That's what you don't want. So by us, fakert, blowing the shofar and saying, we want to be mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be the melech. And we don't care what happens to us. It's more important to us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu be recognized as the Melech than it is for me to worry about my own skin. I'm not dwelling on what's going to happen because of what I did. I know I'm not the greatest person. I know, Chas V'Shalom, I know that I'm in trouble. But I don't want to think about that because the Melech is going to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then in itself creates a Rachmanus. Because we're putting him before ourselves. So again, Mida Keneged Mida, he puts us kiviyachol before himself. It's also a mida keneged mida idea. That's not, Ramchal doesn't say that, but that's one of the explanations they say with shofar. And finally, Yom Kippur. So that's the one day a year where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be completely detached from Olam Hazeh as much as is humanly possible. We can't be completely detached. We are human beings. So, for example, we do need to sleep. Although there are some people who have the minhag today, it's become less and less found. But there were people who would stay up all night on Yom Kippur. The Mishmur says not to do that if you won't be able to concentrate on your tshuva the next day. So, therefore, it's not recommended. But there were people who did it because you're trying to pull away from this world as much as possible. So we don't eat. And we don't do other types of pleasurable things. But nevertheless, we have to breathe, right? You know, we go to the bathroom. I mean, we are human beings. We can't not be human beings. But as much as possible, we are menatek ourselves. We detach ourselves from this world. As the Ramchal writes, the way that the tshuva of Yom Kippur works is that it's tied to the inuyim, that we do have to afflict ourselves to a certain extent. And what's the pshat in afflicting ourselves? Hashem just wants us to have pain. I said, well, let's just take, you know, I don't know, let's just take a fork and stab ourselves. What is he trying to do? So as the Ramchal writes, since the way Yom Kippur works is that we try to be as much as possible like malachim. Well, a human being, just like with Pesach, we weren't meant to be malachim. We're meant to be human. And just as matzah messes up our digestive system, if you want to be not as much not physical as possible, the only way for that to happen is if there's going to be a little bit of discomfort. Because we weren't made to be that way. We weren't made to be creatures that are detached from the physical world. Not, at least not in Olam Hazeh. So therefore, no matter what, it's impossible for us to detach ourselves from the physical world without enduring some pain and discomfort. That's why the Torah expresses it as inui. It's not that Hashem wants us to be afflicted. It's not that Hashem wants us to have pain, but He wants us to be detached. And it is by definition that a human being who is detached from this world is going to feel some pain, because that's not the way we were created. Our bodies don't function well detached from this world. So what does it mean to be detached? No food, no washing. I mean, these are things that A human body is meant to eat every day. It's meant to bathe in certain ways or wash in certain ways every day. That's what a human body was made to be. And by detaching ourselves from those things, it creates affliction, creates some pain, some discomfort. He does end off with an interesting last point, because he's dealing with mitzvah zmanios, and the point he ends off with is Kriyas HaTorah. Kriyas HaTorah is a mitzvah that, again, women are not chayavos in it, but it is a mitzvah that in addition to the individual learning that men have to do, there's also a that's from an individual standpoint, from a Yochid standpoint, there's also a klal learning that everybody has to do, from the klal. And that klal learning is Kriyas HaTorah. And it was set up to be done once, no less than once every 3 days. So Klal Yisrael doesn't go more than 3 days without learning Torah. No, it shouldn't be no less than 3 days. It shouldn't be any more than 3 days without learning Torah. That's why Shabbos, Mincha, and Thursday. And the Kriyas HaTorah, he writes this not as sharply as I saw it. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in one of his tshuvas, makes this more clear, that there's two different mitzvahs in Kriyas HaTorah for a man. One mitzvah is to hear the entire Torah leined, Bitzibur, from a Sefer Torah, over the course of a year. That's one, from Breishis to Vizasa Bracha. And the other is to hear the correct amount of aliyahs for that particular day. 7 on Shabbos, 6 on Yom Kippur, 5 on Yom Tif, 4 on Rosh Chodesh and on Chol HaMoed, 3 on Mincha, Monday, Thursday, and also Tainus. So the to hear the correct amount of aliyahs leined is a separate mitzvah that a person has to have, that the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. So the purpose is to make sure that there is learning on a klal level that goes on in addition to the individual learning that people do. And as he writes, that included in that is the mitzvah Shtayim Mikra V'Echad Targum, that each individual male has to go through the parsha each week twice along with the Targum. So these are the mitzvahs klalius. And of these mitzvahs klalius, so he mentioned Matzah and Pesach, he mentioned Sukkah and Lulav, he mentioned Chanukah and Purim, he mentioned Shofar and Rosh Hashanah, mentioned Yom Kippur, and Kriyas HaTorah. So 6 different categories we'll call them. So of those 6, so Matzah and Pesach, women are chayavos in. Chanukah and Purim, women are chayavos in. And Yom Kippur, women are chayavos in. Right. Shofar and Rosh Hashanah, women are not chayavos in, but women have accepted it as a chiyuv. And then Sukkah, Lulav on Sukkot, and Kriyas HaTorah, women are not chayavos in, and they have not accepted it as a chiyuv. Although women can do it, and you get schar if you do it, but you're not required to do it. Now, how are we to understand those things? Meaning like this. We know that the reason why women are chayavos in Chanukah and Purim, and for that matter also on Arba Kosos at the Seder, why is that? Why are women chayav in those mitzvahs?
They're part of the
Nes. Okay, because Afhein Hayu Ba'osa Nes. Because they were also involved in the Nes, which is a machlokes harishon, whether that means women did the Nes, meaning made the Nes happen, right? The Nashim Tzidkanios in Mitzrayim, Yehudis on Chanukah, Esther on Purim, Afhein Hayu Ba'osa Nes, they made the Nes happen, or does it mean that the Nes happened to women? That not only were the men saved on Purim and on Chanukah, and not only the men go out of Mitzrayim, but also the women. And therefore, the Nes happened to women as well. Matzah, women are chayavos, and not because of Avin Hayu Basa Nes. It's because the Torah is mechayav women in Matzah. The rule of Avin Hayu Basa Nes can't apply to a Daraisa, to a Torah mitzvah. It can only apply to Derabbanans. Chanukah is a Derabbanan. Purim is a Derabbanan. Arba Kosos is Derabbanan. But matzah is daraisa. It's from the Torah. And women are chayavos in matzah, just like men. So how are we going to understand this? Are we going to say like this? Matzah, which we mentioned before, is the inyan of living in a way that we are still involved in Olam Hazeh, but in a more, in a less indulgent manner. So women are chayav b'sen. So that would seem to indicate that women need to do that as much as men do. Now what about sukkah lulav? The idea of the kedusha of being inside the sukkah, the idea of v'shem Hashem, the Shem Hashem is upon you with the lulav and esrog. So are we to say that only men need those things and women don't need those things? So we could suggest that, and in a certain way we're going to have to say that, because if a woman is in chayev, it means that the tikkun isn't necessary. So for whatever reason, that particular type of mitzvah is not one that a woman needs. So that's fine, except that it's hard to swallow. Because what are we going to say? Women don't need the kedusha of the sukkah? So are we going to say to a woman, no, don't walk into the sukkah because you don't need it. And you're just wasting your time coming in here because it's not going to do anything for you because you have it already. We don't say that. We say no. If you want to come in, you get schar. So it must be that it is doing something for you. It can't be that it's worthless. But if you already have it already, how is it doing anything for you, right? If I already have, if you're going to teach me, there's a class, and the class that's being taught is about simple addition. I already know simple addition. So if I'm walking to the class, I'm wasting my time. I'm sitting through an hour of information that I already know. So what's the point? So if a woman already has whatever it is that sukkah is providing, if a woman already has whatever lulav and esrog is providing, then it should be a waste of time for a woman to walk into a sukkah. She might want to sit there because she wants to be with her family, but we shouldn't say that a woman gets schar for going into a sukkah. For what? What's the point? A woman gets schar for picking up a lulav and esrog. Why? You already have it. Whatever the lulav and esrog does for you, you already have. So what's the point? It's a waste of time. So it can't be that when we say that a woman doesn't need that tikkun, it can't mean that you already have what it provides. Do you understand what I'm saying? That can't be. If we're going to use our simple addition example, it's not the pshat that men don't know simple addition and women do know simple addition. So therefore, for a man to sit through the class is valuable. For a woman to sit through the class is a waste of time. It can't be that's the pshat. The pshat is, neither one of them knows simple addition. The men don't know it, and the women don't know it. But it's important that the man learn it, and it's not important that the woman learn it, or at least not as important. That's what it has to mean. It's not the pshat that a woman has whatever it is sukkah provides. A woman has whatever it is the lulav provides. It's that a woman doesn't have it just like a man doesn't have it. But a woman doesn't need it as much as a man needs it. Could a woman get something out of it? Yes. Because there is something that is added, but it is not as essential for a woman to get those things as for a man. That's what you have to say it means. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. So, therefore, it would be, let's give another example. Instead of simple addition, let's give a different type of example. Let's say a man, let's say there's, God forbid, a war, and the men are going out to war, and the women are not going out to war. Women should not go out to war. Women should be at home. So, there's weapons. So the men definitely need the weapons. That's critical that a man pick up a weapon before he goes out to fight. What about for the women? Should they have weapons in the houses? It's probably a good thing, just in case. But is it as critical as it is for a man? No, because a man's going out on the battlefield. So he needs the gun much more than a woman's. If you only have one gun, you for sure give it to the man. Because the woman doesn't need it as much. If you have two, and it's possible for a woman to get it, so then why not? It's helpful. That's what we're talking about over here. So the gain of sukkah, of this kedusha that the sukkah provides, the gain of the Shem Hashem, the Nikra Alacha, that the lulav provides, both men and women can gain from that. But the men, it's critical. They need it. They're lacking without it. Women don't need it as much as men need it. But it is helpful. And if they don't do the mitzvah, they don't have it. They just don't need it as much. So first of all, it's worthwhile to understand the mitzvah, because if you do it, you understand what you're doing. But besides that, it's very important for a woman to understand what the mitzvah is doing, even if a woman never does the mitzvah. Why? Because you have to understand what is happening when your father, your brothers, your husband, Mitzvah Hashem, your boys, Mitzvah Hashem, your sons, when they go into the sukkah, what are they doing and why are they doing it? What's happening to them when they do that? It's important that you understand that. It's important that you realize what's happening to them. When they walk into the sukkah, they're picking up this critical kedusha that they are lacking if they don't have. And when they pick up the Lulav and Esrog, they're picking up this Shema Hashem Nikra Alecha, critical, that they're lacking if they don't have. That if they don't have those things, it's like running out to battle and leaving your gun at home. They are being fortified by these things, which are critical pieces. And it's very important that you understand what they're getting out of it. But it really goes beyond that. The reason why it goes beyond that is because that in addition to the individuals doing the mitzvah, there's also the effect on the whole klal. You see, when klal Yisrael does a mitzvah properly, that affects the whole klal. So that when the men do the mitzvah of sukkah properly, there's a kedusha that accrues to the whole klal. Because the men are doing it, so it comes back on the whole klal. The women weren't mechuyavas to do it. They weren't told to do it. But when the men do it, it reflects on the whole klal. This is why Ashkenazim say that when a woman does a mitzvah that she's not mechuyavas to do, she could still make a bracha. The question is, how can you make a bracha? It says, Asher kideshanu b'mitzvah sav v'tzivanu. He commanded us. I mean, he didn't command you. How can you make such a bracha? So the answer is, so Sfaradim don't make a bracha. Sfaradi women don't make a bracha. But Ashkenazi women do. Why? Because what we say is that Hashem commanded the Jewish people. If there wasn't a mitzvah that Hashem was mitzaveh on the men, then there'd be no mitzvah for the women to do either. So vitzivano doesn't mean, Hashem, you told me to do it. It means you told us, the Yidden, to do this mitzvah. But male, I can do it too. That's the lashon of vitzivano. When the men do the mitzvah properly, it affects everybody the same way. So that's why also, when they do Lulav and Esrog, Vero, Kalam, Yitzchak, Hashem, Hashem, Nikra, Alecha, that happens to the women also. It's not the pshat that the goyim are only scared of the men, they'll be scared of the women too, because it was being done properly by the men. That's true on a klal level, and it's true on a more individual level, when you talk about communities and families. The men in the family do the mitzvah properly, all of the members of the family are affected by that. The men of the community do the mitzvah properly, all of the members of the community are affected by that. That's a critical thing to understand in how these mitzvahs work. Now, shofar is technically the same thing. Shofar, it's the same idea that both these things are true. That whatever it is that shofar provides, this rachmanus in din, the men need it. Excuse me, I'll say, the men don't have it without shofar, the women don't have it without shofar. And both gain by hearing the shofar. But the men need it. The men are lacking without it. The women don't need it. It's good to have it, but they don't need it. And of course, again, if the men do it properly, it accrues to the whole klal. Nevertheless, the mitzvah of shofar, I assume because it's Rosh Hashanah, I assume this is why, because Rosh Hashanah is different than all of the Yom Tovim, because of how careful we want to be on Rosh Hashanah, women have accepted it as a chiyuv. Because of the special nature, I believe, of Rosh Hashanah. That's probably why women have accepted it as a special chiyuv. Kriyas HaTorah, you should know that, that again, it's all the same thing is going to apply over there. It's the men that need it. The more, you know, the women gain from it, but don't need it. You should know about Kriyas HaTorah. When Mitzvah Hashem, you're going to be in a position where your husband, your sons need to get to minyan. They need to get to minyan, daven b'tzibur. And it's hard. It's hard for a woman to let her husband go at times. It's very difficult. Sometimes for a man to leave early in the morning, to run out in the middle of supper time or homework time or whatever it is, got to run out to mincha ma'ariv, got to daven with the minyan. And it's very important he davens with the minyan. But Kriyas HaTorah has a special status all to itself. There was one of the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael in the mid-19th century. He lived in the 1850s, 1860s. His name was Rav Yehosef Schwartz. He spelled his name Yud Hey Vav Samach Pei. Yehosef Schwartz. Rabbi Yehosef Schwartz. He was one of the great Talmidei Chacham of that dar. So one of the things that he did is that he was Mitzayin Gvulos Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. Now in those days, Eretz Yisrael, I mean, the amount of Yidden in Eretz Yisrael were very, very, very few. And it was a hostile place. It wasn't developed. It was dangerous. It was hard to live there. It was not, you know, it was a very, very big Mesiras Nefesh to live in Eretz Yisrael. He used to go around to mark the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, where they are. Where do you take off Trumas and Maisers? Where do you not take off Trumas and Maisers? Etc. He would mark, where does Shemitah apply, where does not apply? He would go around and mark the boundaries. Based on Tanakh and based on Chazal, he would figure out where the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael were. Now, because he had to do that, because he did that, he would be away the whole week, traveling. And therefore, he would miss davening in its Sibor. So I read he used to fast every Monday and Thursday. Every Monday and Thursday of his life, well, I don't know of his life, but that tkufa, he fasted. And the reason is because he was missing Kriya Satara Monday and Thursday. So it was fascinating to me. He missed Tfilah B'Tzibur every day, but that he didn't fast for. But Kriya Satara he fasted for. From missing Monday and Thursday, Kriya Satara. Just to show you the status of Kriya Satara. Not to dismiss it. It's just, men need to hear the shmooze. I tell it to men all the time. Because a lot of men, they put great emphasis on making sure they're down with a minion, but they leave early, they have to run out, they have to run to work, whatever it is, and they don't put great emphasis on Kriya Satara. Or for Mincha and Shabbos. Mincha and Shabbos come a little bit late, you miss Kriya Satara, because Minchan Shabbos starts with Ashrei V'Alatzion, Kriya Satara, then Shmon Esrei. Well, you can come late to Minchan Shabbos and still get there in time for Tefillah B'Tzibur, Shmon Esrei, but you miss Kriya Satara. So this is a good shmooze for men. Many to hear this, that Kriya Satara is not something just to big deal, Kriya Satara. No, he used to fast for missing Kriya Satara, just to show you how the chashivas of Kriya Satara. Any questions before we end? Okay.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.